Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
People, look alive. It's showtime.
Now live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, it's Chuck and Winkler on The Fan.
So shut up and listen.
Doors open in 3, 2, 1.
Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios. Lots going on this weekend. The Brewers have a chance to not only get into the playoffs, but they could still win that NL Central. Very interesting series between the Cubs and Cardinals kicks off here tonight. Those teams play 7 times yet in the remaining 10 games each that they have. So it's going to be a very compelling situation down the stretch. We've got the Packers and Broncos coming up on Sunday, and then we've got a big weekend of college football again with the Badgers and Michigan, and that's a spotlight game for Fox. Game's going to be on Fox. Fox this year is putting their biggest games at 11 o'clock because usually the biggest game of the night is on ABC. This weekend it's on CBS with Notre Dame and Georgia, but Fox always puts a game on in primetime, and it gets destroyed in the ratings. Mm-hmm. So they thought, let's put our big game at 11 o'clock, and this weekend it's the Badgers in Michigan.
Yeah, because like at mid-afternoon on a Saturday, you're thinking SEC, or you're thinking Big Ten, but usually the SEC, that 2:30 game, and then at night, they always got killed on an ESPN game. But, the Pac-12 wants us to show 11 o'clock games. That's probably an idea for next year. But Wisconsin against Wisconsin right out of the gates here. Michigan, 11 a.m., Camp Randall. Badgers, a slight favorite in this game, Bart.
Well, I think the Badgers have looked better than some thought, and Michigan's maybe looked worse than some thought. So maybe we can play this a bunch on Monday, one of our all-time favorite clips.
Well, the Badgers whooped Michigan bad.
From Saturday Night Live a few years ago, we're going to preview this game and figure out what's going on with Michigan, and maybe it stems from their head coach, John U. Bacon, New York Times best-selling author, joining us here, Chuck and Winkler. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. The book is called Overtime. It's a new book on Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines at the crossroads of college football. We know a lot about Harbaugh. He's a very good recruiter. Mm-hmm. Can't seem to win that big game against the team they do not mention. We can, Ohio State. So John U. Bacon has written about that and more in the book Overtime. He joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. John, thanks for a couple of minutes. How are you?
My pleasure, Chuck and Winkler. In fact, right now I believe Pat Richter, my old hockey player, Bear Richter are both listening. So how about that?
Oh, wow. That's outstanding.
Friends in Badger Town.
Hey, Jim Harbaugh, is this a year that he has to get it done for Michigan? I mean, I'm sure Michigan, there's high standards there in Michigan. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's depends on whom you ask. It probably happens in three circles, basically. The national media, no question they've got him fired if he loses that game. So that's a fait accompli to them. The Michigan fans are 75-80% still very much on board, 10-15% grumbling about the Ohio State streak, which, of course, started long before Harbaugh showed up. And then, of course, then you got the AD, Ward Manuel, and the vote there is 1-0 squarely in Harbaugh's favor. So his job is not in the hot seat, but it might become unpleasant, I guess is how I'd put it.
I got to think, though, as we talked to John U. Bacon, author of the book Overtime, which takes a look at Jim Harbaugh and Michigan up to this point, it's got to be, I mean, he's helped make this program better than what it was when he got there. I mean, they've gone through some coaches that it just did not work out with them. He's recruited some good athletes. I mean, really, I think all comes down to he's got to win that Ohio State game before he gets the credit that maybe he deserves.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I mean, his first year, of course, in 2015, they went from under Brady Hill. It was 11 wins, 8 wins, 7 wins, 5 wins, a very steep decline and quick, of course. Harbaugh gets there and wins 10 games his first year, which might have been the worst thing he could have done, because then everyone thinks you're that close right away. The next year they lose to Ohio State in double overtime for the Big Ten title, so you still think you're that close. And then in 2017, a big step back when, of course, Michigan lost to Michigan State, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Ohio State, you know, probably the four biggest rivals in the Big Ten. So they started over in 2018, 10-game winning streak, but you still lost to Ohio State. So until you beat Ohio State, nobody in Ann Arbor is going to think that you've turned it around completely, although he's done a great job off the field as well.
But Michigan, I think the standard every year is win 10 games, isn't it? I mean, even though they've gone through some substandard years, 10 wins is the benchmark for Michigan each and every year, I want to say. And getting in some of these other type of bowls, these secondary bowls, not acceptable.
That's exactly right. That's the mentality, certainly, of the fan base. 10 games is sort of the baseline, as you say. That's when you can start talking about having a good year at 10 wins. Below that, you've clearly fallen short. You've also got to win, the theory goes, not the reality, that you've got to beat Michigan State pretty much everywhere, every year, and at least split with the Buckeyes. Even in Bo's heyday, he was, 11-10-1 against those guys, 11-9-1 against those guys. So nobody has, mopped up on those guys as such. But you got to be competitive. And Michigan has won only twice this century, and I'll remind you that it's 2019. So that starts to get old. But you're right, that is the bar.
John Eubanks joining us on Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan. The book is Overtime, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines at the Crossroads of College Football. Is Jim Harbaugh as good as a recruiter as we hear he is? I mean, we hear about him sleeping in people's tents in their backyard and all this kind of stuff. Is he as good as we hear the stories?
Well, I'd say that three of the 4 years he's had a top 10 recruiting class, which, as you know, in the North is hard to do. Only really Ohio State has pulled that off with consistency, in the North at least. But he did slip to 22 after the 2017 8-5 year. So I'd say he's very good. He's not at the Alabama level where Saban had seven straight number one ranked classes. That's impossible to beat in the North. But I think Jim gets the most out of what he's got to offer, including the weather. And, of course, you don't have the talent base up here you have in the South. But I would say that recruiting has clearly been a strength. We've got a chapter on that in the book, by the way, called Hard to Beat the Cheaters, which got a lot of attention, as you might imagine.
All right, the rivalry between Wisconsin and Michigan, if we want to call it that, was one-sided at one point. Wisconsin used to get crushed by Michigan back in the 70s and 80s, and then there was that little game in 82 when Wisconsin upset Michigan, who was number one on opening day.
1981, the fall of my senior year in high school, I will never forget that. Thank you.
You remember that, huh?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, 21-20.
I'm set up on this.
That was the first Badger game I ever went to.
No, well, how about that? Your memories are better than mine.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who the Michigan quarterback was that day. That wasn't Harbaugh, was it?
Steve Smith, no. It was before Harbaugh, but not by much. Steve Smith, I think.
Okay. So, but since then, like the last 10 meetings, I think they split. They've gone 5-5. How does Michigan view like the Wisconsin program, which has been very solid, bowls every year, and they've been they've gone to the Big Ten title game. But how do people on the Michigan side like view Wisconsin's this rivalry with Wisconsin?
Oh, very serious. Again, it's considered one of the Michigan's top rivals now, outside of obviously Michigan State and Ohio State. But I would say Wisconsin and Penn State are a very close second tier, if you will, on that list, and they're for the same reason. Both schools play the game the right way. They're incredibly tough. They're always well coached. They run downhill. The Michigan guys love smash mouth football. If you get the book, you'll see the chapter on the Badgers. And they say, man, those guys play the game right. It's no trash talk, nothing extra after the whistle. But you know they're coming after you. They're corn-fed. They're well-coached. And if you're not ready, you're going to get blown over. And that's what happened 2 years ago, of course.
John Eubanks joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019, look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank providing simply local common-sense lending to your community since 1935. The book is called Overtime, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines at the Crossroads College Football. You come into this game this weekend where Michigan, I think, was favored for most of the season, and then they probably should have lost to Army if that field goal kicker had anything to say about it. Are you surprised with how poor maybe Michigan's played up to this point, and will that affect their chances this weekend? Because the Badgers haven't allowed a point yet.
Well, the zero gets my attention, by the way. When you score 100 points on the one side and zero against, that's I don't care who you're playing. That's good football. So I would say that, yeah, absolutely. Excuse me. Holy mackerel, man.
The Badgers are so good, you're choking up a little bit.
How about that? Yeah. Man.
Drink of water.
Is that any better?
Orange juice.
I might need to call you about. Oh, here we go. He's going to power through it. Got to play hurt. Here we go. All right. There it is. I don't know what that was. Holy mackerel. But anyway, I would say this. That against Army, man, my voice is just shot. A little better there. Army. Against Army. Man, is this going to work? Come on, voice. Here we go. Against Army. What surprised me there, of course, is the offensive line could not get a big yard when they needed one. Of course, the game went to double overtime. Like I said, that kid had never kicked a field goal before in his life, and he almost made a 50-yarder, which would have damn near ended the season for Michigan right there, pretty much. But Shea Patterson, the starting quarterback, has been injured. He's not 100%. They've had 5 fumbles this year already lost. They had 3 all last season. So when John Runyon's back in the offensive line, left tackle, when Shea's 100% this weekend, when they've got Dwum Ford back on the defensive line, all those things should make a difference this weekend. But Michigan right now is a gigantic question mark. It's hard to tell what they're going to be, whereas Wisconsin right now is hitting on all cylinders. So this game will tell a lot about both teams.
Coincidentally, that was our last question. We're not so just, but get a drink of water and feel better, and then we'll talk to you again at some point. John, we appreciate it, and we'll tell everybody again about your book.
That sounds great, guys. I really enjoyed it. And also, this is a good look inside any big-time program. I've seen Wisconsin. I've talked to Alvarez at length about the staffers behind the scenes, the whole machine, how it works. I followed 8 players throughout the season. It's fun to see what it looks like to them and what it means to them, including their parents, which is quite enlightening. Nothing quite like seeing your kid get ripped on Twitter on a Saturday night. So check it out. And big game this weekend. The one big insult, of course, this weekend is, as you say, the 11 o'clock kickoff. Man, jump around is made for 7 o'clock at night. It's not made for noon, but that's what I say.
Well, we shouldn't be able to do jump around since BYU essentially stole it from us last year, but I guess we can still do that. John, appreciate it.
You guys own it. All right, thanks, guys.
We'll talk soon. John U. Bacon joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Again, the book is called Overtime, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines at the Crossroads of College Football. That's a big game coming up on Saturday.
Michigan should beat Army 100 out of 100 times. I mean, the level of guy that Michigan recruits and the level of player that Army has, Michigan should be dominating. Michigan should be dominating those games. So that game went to double overtime. Army should not be in a ball game, based even on reputation alone, with Michigan. Now, this game coming up on Saturday. You know, Wisconsin, you know, I could see them draining the clock and pulling off a Camp Randall upset. Well, they're 3.5-point favorites, so I guess it wouldn't be an upset.
But I think they could win this game by double digits.
Well, yeah, I think they're going to win
the way that Wisconsin's played and the way that Michigan's played.
No, I think, you know, Michigan's got talent, but I think maybe Wisconsin was a little underrated coming into the season. They have Jonathan Taylor. The defense hasn't allowed a point. Again, they've played 2 cupcakes, okay, but still they trounce those teams handily.
Well, they're both 2-0, and what I do in college football is I root for teams to stay undefeated because I just think, like, 6-0 matchups are much better than 6-0 and 5-1. I love that there's sort of this playoff that develops across the season. While it's still the 4-team playoff, there's sort of a playoff within the season. And I don't think we've brought this up at all this week. Arizona State's 3-0 because they beat Michigan State.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, 10-7 on Saturday night. Matt, that was a little bit of a surprise. Michigan State was a heavy favorite in that game. They're like a 15-point favorite.
So really, all the Big Ten teams... Michigan struggled, Nebraska lost, Michigan State has lost, Ohio State's looked like Ohio State, and then the Badgers have been good, and everybody else is kind of, you know, feeling themselves out. So this should be a big game this weekend. We'll talk more of it from the Badgers side of things with our buddy Ben Wergel. That'll be tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Big interview yesterday on The Fan. Ron Wolf sitting down with Bill Michaels. We'll bring you some highlights of that coming up next if you missed it. And then Mike Clemens will join us at 9:30 to talk more about Packers-Broncos. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins, 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
As far as a free agent signing that Ted Thompson picked up, like, obviously Charles is off to the Hall of Fame, and certainly...
Oh, no, he's a Hall of Fame player. There's no question. That was marvelous what Ted did.
Okay.
He got Pickett and Woodson. And I'm surprised he stopped after that. I don't think he ever went after any more high-volume free agents. Mm-hmm. But what a pair to get.
So Ron Wolf sort of saying he's not sure why Ted Thompson stopped getting free agents. I'm Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman here on The Fan. We'll talk to Mike Clemens coming up at 9:30. I think the thing with not signing free agents, I mean, why don't you sign free agents? Well, it's an open market, and you probably have to overbid on these guys. Is Preston Smith, Billy Turner, Za'Darius Smith, Adrian Amos, are they worth, if you started from scratch, what they're getting? They're probably getting a little more because of the supply and demand sort of thing. But I think this year is a good indication of what free agents can do and why it's good to go outside your box a little bit, because Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith have come in here. They don't have Packer history in their brain. They are new. They've got different experiences. They are different types of players. They didn't really know each other that well. Now they're like best friends. But when you bring outside forces into a locker room in a positive way, Adrian Amos, another guy, just different personalities, instead of, it's good to build within your system, but it's also good to like get fresh perspective, and that's what these guys have brought. So not just the play on the field, Chuck, has been good, but just that it's a different, it's somebody looking at your organization with different eyes.
Well, Ted always thought through free agency, why should I go out and spend all this money on a guy when most of the time you make the big splash of free agency, it looks good on press conference day, but then after that, those players never live up to the billing that they get. So he just never wanted to do that. He just thought it was not unnecessary. But now as we look back, we look, okay, a couple of those years where they made the playoffs but didn't go far, could they have been helped with a couple of free agent ads that year? Could they have added, you know, they added a couple of pieces, maybe somebody in the secondary spent a little money instead of throwing, you know, a guy practice squatter out there? Maybe things would have been different. I think they relied too much on the talent of Aaron Rodgers trying to get them through and pull them through. And it did in 2010 when, you know, a miracle happened. They, with 15 guys on the injured list, they were somehow able to piece it through with the Frank Zombos of the world and get to the Super Bowl and win it. But that was Ted's philosophy. He did not want to spend any money. And you know, Aaron, obviously Ron Wolf did. He wanted to spend some money. He didn't go crazy in free agency, but he spent money here and there.
Well, yeah, you have to get guys to make your team better.
Yeah, he does. You know,
it's Ron Cox or Hardy Nickerson, or
yeah,
there were Guy McIntyre, I think, was a Packer for a year.
Well, he wanted to get Andre Rison in 1995, and because he was the big free agent, he wanted to get Andre Rison.
Late Terry Glenn.
Terry Glenn picked him up. Terry Glenn did that. Yeah, he picked him up in 2003, and it didn't work out, but he rolled the dice on him. Well, that wasn't – no. That was Mike Sherman.
Yeah,
that was
Mike Sherman. I'm just saying, like, yeah. Free agents in general. But the Andre Rison's a good example.
But the Rison thing, in 1995, passed on him. But then in 1996, when he had his receivers go down, he had Antonio Freeman go down with a broken arm. He lost Robert Brooks. And that was a season that they were the odds-on favorite to go to the Super Bowl. So he saw, you know, his receiving core was not very good, and they lost a game down in Dallas on a Monday night. And his receiving core had guys like Terry Mickens, and his best wide receiver was an aging Don Beebe. So he told his coaching staff, guys, we should go out and get Andre Rison. And I know he's a problem and all that, but let's bring Rison in. He asked Holmgren. He asked Mariucci. He asked everybody on staff, and they all said, yes, go out and get him. Bring him in. They bought Rison, and of course Rison scored the first touchdown of the Super Bowl. But he helped lift the Packers the rest of the season. Didn't re-sign him, but he helped them. And that would be a move Ted would not make. If Ted was the general manager of the Packers in 96, Bart, he would not have gone out there and signed a troubled Andre Rison, who was just cut by Atlanta.
More impressive that the Packers never lost a game with Andre Rison, or that the Packers have never lost a game since I had a son.
His streak was a little longer. You have a few more games to go yet.
Or Matt LaFleur is undefeated.
Matt LaFleur's got a few more games to go, too.
Yeah.
You and your son and LaFleur, same amount of games.
Whatever LaFleur's record is will be what my son's record is. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins. We'll talk to Mike Clemens here in a moment. The thing that bothers me, too, isn't just that they didn't go spend money. They also wouldn't give up draft picks for, like, Packers. Randy Moss should have been a Packer. Tony Gonzalez should have been a Packer, but he would. Marshawn Lynch should have been a Packer. but he would never give up that fourth, fifth, sixth round pick.
He'd rather rely on James Starks, and how it worked out with Starks that year. But yeah, I mean, all these guys, he wouldn't give up a fifth round pick for Randy Moss. Come on.
He's got a sixth round pick for Trevor Davis.
Yeah, fifth round pick for Randy Moss. Come on. But at the time, though, when I was doing sports talk in Green Bay, Packer fans were dead against getting Randy Moss there. I'm telling you, it was probably 7 out of 10 people who didn't want Randy Moss, a Green Bay Packer.
Well, but if he was a Packer, like, we're all going to boo Manny Machado again today, but yeah, if he signed with the Brewers,
he's a favorite
fan. Buying a Machado jersey
exactly.
13 minutes.
But, you know, it was shortly after Randy Moss, you know, mooned the crowd at Lambeau Field in that playoff game.
Oh.
So, and then, of course, he played the Vikings, and that was that, and so fans didn't look at it, how much he was going to help the team. They just looked at those things.
Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold reporter. He joins us in 5 minutes. You can join Perkins this weekend and get some pumpkin spiced pancakes. They've got the pumpkin spice pancakes at Perkins. You can get the 3 buttermilk pancakes made from scratch with the bacon, the eggs, the sausage. Very good stuff. Look at the pot roast potluck menu. Now, you think pot roast, you think the traditional pot roast meal, the pot roast dinner, the pot roast stroganoff. They've got all that too. But they've got some different items maybe for lunch, like the pot roast melt. And when I say pot roast, do you think breakfast? Probably not, but you will once you get in there. The pot roast sunrise skillet. So it's, think of a skillet. You got your American potatoes there, but then throw gravy on it and throw on some red bell peppers, throw on some beef, and then some eggs on top. It's really good. We had it a couple weeks ago when they brought it in, the fajita breakfast quesadilla. It's the pot roast potluck menu exclusively at Perkins and for a limited time. Mike Clemens joins us in just a couple of minutes. Packers move on from Trevor Davis. So who's returning kicks this weekend? We'll talk to Clem next. Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
Boyle is 3-3 on this drive. 3rd down and 3. Boyle. And he's going to the end zone and caught! That's a touchdown from Trevor Davis with the grab. My goodness, has he played well tonight.
Double move. Basically, they're playing inside leverage already, so I didn't really try to fake him inside too much because he already kind of gave me leverage. So went inside just a little bit, got to stack him and score the touchdown. This is my first game in a while, so it feels good to go out there.
Can't think it's a coincidence that he plays so well against the Raiders in preseason, and then it's the Raiders willing to give up a 6th-round pick. Trevor Davis traded yesterday to Oakland. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. Chuck and Winkler here on 105.7 FM The Fan, AM 1250, radio.com app. So now what? Who's returning kicks? And are we surprised Trevor Davis got traded? I was.
I was too, because he's like the number 4 wide receiver on the team at the moment, and he's then their primary return guy.
And it also seemed like he was going to be here forever no matter what he yelled in an airport.
Yeah, that too. Yes, that too. But he got away with one. He got a mulligan on that one.
Yeah,
but you know, they got a 6th-rounder. Just a little surprised that they traded him. I'm just like, wow, because I know at one point, even last year, he was on the fence of getting cut this year, and you know, he made the team, and it looked like with his speed, he's the fastest receiver, that they were going to find a use for him somehow on the team. Never happened. Never had much time to happen. But you know, he was out there. It mentions a 4th receiver and had the one catch for 28 yards against Chicago, and that was it.
We are served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. Mike Clemens joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Brought to you by Pottawatomie. It's all happening at Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. Visit paysbig.com. Good morning, Clem.
Hi, Clem.
Refresh my memory. What did Trevor Davis yell in an airport?
He yelled the, I don't want to, B-O-M-B.
Well, you could say that on the radio. We're not in an airport.
He was angry at somebody?
No, he said something like, he was joking around, saying like, it's not like I'm going to yell, bomb.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they're
right.
Like, oh, you just did it.
Yeah. Right. He did something stupid at TSA.
Yeah.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised. I'm shocked. I don't understand. I don't really get what the plan is here. So, you know, Trevor Davis is a guy. Is this like a ha-ha Clinton Dix thing? Like, you know, the Packers are shopping around because he's not getting along? No, he's... he's hardworking. Remember when you know he knew he needed to step up his game like 2 years ago, and he was showing Ron Zook, the special teams coordinator, tapes of him working on returning kicks and punt returns and how he had improved his speed and technique and everything in the off season. You know, very hardworking kid out of Cal. Smart guy. You know, I kind of give him like a B minus overall as a return guy because the ball security is okay. Decision making, okay. You know, Devin Hester, who was never the sharpest knife in the drawer, he was just instinctively good as a returner. He would catch the ball. He'd look it in all the way in, and he'd take like a half-second pause, and you could see him pick his lane. And then with his, you know, incredible burst, he'd hit that lane, and that's why he just had those incredible returns, including the one I saw him return for a touchdown in the Super Bowl against the Colts in the driving rain in Miami. So Trevor Davis is a fast kid.
Let me get the story right first. He didn't yell bomb. He was joking at the counter about that he had packed an explosive.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So he said something like, well, it's not like I packed. I don't know. He was joking about
right.
it.
Right. They were asking him questions. Yeah. You know, and then it you know, also gets into one of those things like, don't you know who I am? I'm a Green Bay Packer. You know, it gets into
I'm
that.
Trevor Davis.
I'm the, like, the sixth Davis receiver on this team.
Yeah. Security. Yeah. So the thing about Trevor is, well, so this has got to start with the Raiders, all right? There's where the need is, because they got three or four guys, other wide receivers are injured. Of course, they gave up a couple of high draft picks for Antonio Brown at the wide receiver position. And then they got Dwayne Harris, who's one of their veterans. He's on the injured reserve, injured this week, and he's been a kickoff and punt returner for him. And Gruden was talking about this, his presser yesterday, before the deal got announced later in the day, that he might have to put like Hunter Renfro, the rookie receiver, back there for kick returns this weekend when they play the Vikings. As for where the Packers are coming from in this, all right, I get it that, you know, Trevor Davis, fifth-round pick, when you talk about wide receivers next year, you get Equanimeous St. Brown back, and, you know, you think overall he's a better overall prospected wide receiver. Darius Shepherd, when you played the Chiefs, he had all the punt returns, and he was back for kickoff returns. They had touchbacks, but, you know, they weren't trying anybody else out. And you know, that's, they knew that Darius Shepherd had a lot of skills, maybe a slot guy for the future, but he could earn a spot on the roster as a return guy. Well, in the Chiefs game, the final preseason game, he has a hamstring injury. He's still listed as limited this week. So they ain't going to use him this weekend against the Broncos. I don't know if they put Jair Alexander back or Tremont Williams back there. But at the end of the day, for this Trevor Davis deal, I guess the Raiders, if they call and they say, hey, Trevor Davis, man, in the game in Winnipeg against us, 5 catches, 78 yards, and he had that nice 17-yard return on the punt, he had a hell of a night, just, you know, just like Kevin Harlan was saying there in the play-by-play. So this always happens, these preseason games. A guy from the other team puts on a big show, and these GMs go, man, we want a piece of that. So they call the Packers, and they get a sixth-round pick for a guy that they picked up in the fifth round. That's pretty good value. What I don't understand why the Packers are doing this now. I mean, don't you have a season to play right now? And to use this guy as a, you know, pretty average kick returner, or they're just going to have to, you know, put in a couple of substitutes until they think they're going to have Darius Shepherd ready. Now, maybe the Raiders called them early in the week. Maybe Mike Mayock called them early in the week to say, hey, we're willing to give you a six-round pick. And Gutekunst says, hang on a second, let me see if I got a backup plan. So that's when they sign Tremont Smith off of waivers from the Chiefs. Now, here's a guy that was a defensive back with good speed, like 4.4 speed out of Central Arkansas. And in the year and a half, 2 years he was with the Chiefs, they couldn't find a spot for him. They couldn't trust him enough at defensive back. He played a little bit of safety, but they liked his speed. So how about kick returner? He'd never done that before. So he had a 37-yard kick return against the Packers in that preseason game. He had two big returns against them. So this is the Packers seeing a guy like, wow, that guy was pretty good. We saw him in person when we played the Kansas City Chiefs here at Lambeau Field. And so they pick up this guy, and they think they'd use him. So I talked to this Tremont Smith yesterday now, and I said, so when it got to be this your second camp, Andy Reid started lining you up at running back? I mean, how did that come about?
Well, it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't just an overnight process. Me and Coach Reid had talked about it beforehand, and
came in the next year, was kind of loaded at DBs. I mean, you know, got good DBs over there. And just, he asked me about offense. I was like, of course, just whatever you want me to do. And next day, it happened.
All right, who's going to return punts? And for that matter, who's going to be their kick returner on Sunday?
I don't know. I don't know.
What'd you guess?
LaFleur's going to talk. Well, you know, they put like Jamal Williams back there sometimes for kick return. A guy could take the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Jair Alexander or Tremont Williams, you know, a sure-handed guy. Because it's just that even though you just brought this guy in from the Chiefs, you don't put him out there 4 days later. I mean, you know, Trevor Davis earns that job by catching balls from the jugs machine, from OTAs to mini camp to, you know, all those guys that they tried out at that position. They've got to see, you know, 100 reps and how you react to the football, both in joint practices and all that stuff, before they trust you back there, you know, to for ball security and everything. So
okay.
I think that they're going to have somebody that's on their roster, whoever, the, you know, was their backup, if it was last week, if Trevor Davis went down, you know, it'll be one of those guys that they'll have. I don't think they're going to put this Tremont Smith guy that they just picked up from the Chiefs week one. I would be surprised.
Well, I looked at it like this. They saw that Smith was available. Here's a guy who was fourth in the league in the NFL in kick returns last year. Could they have done this? Let's go out and get this guy and bring him in. And, you know, we don't need Trevor Davis.
Start shopping Trevor.
Yeah.
You know, that might have been the way that the Green Bay was actually the proactive one on this.
Mm-hmm.
But, obviously I do know is that they've got the Raiders have got three receivers that are banged up, and they need some help at returner as well. So they had the need as well. But so. And we're not. I tell you what, I'm not going to know this afternoon either, because they're not going to show it to us in practice, or LaFleur's probably not going to talk about it. It'll be a game time decision, Chuck and Bart.
Well, we'll find out this weekend as we talk to Mike Clemens here, which we do Tuesdays and Thursdays around 9:30. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan. Now, you'd talked to us on Tuesday, and you'd said that you thought Aaron Rodgers was a little banged up in that second half against Minnesota. You guys were able to talk to him about that yesterday.
I asked him directly. I said, "Man, you know, those first three drives, dude, you know, lightning fast break offense." And then I saw you take a couple shots, and during like a TV timeout, it looked like his leg got rolled up on or something, and he was kind of hobbling. And he wasn't the same, I thought, the rest of the game. He was really tired after that game. You know, you played some of his press conference on Monday's show. I asked him yesterday, did you take some shots against the Vikings?
I mean, I took some shots, yeah. I don't think it made it hard to recover. My feet were a little sore, but mostly because, you know, that 4 minute, I was kind of following the ball. I saw Lane on the ground. I went to pick him up, and he stomped on my foot as he came up on accident, I'm sure. But no, my body feels good. I think tempo is something we can work in and out of, as opposed to years past when we did sustained drives of consistent tempo. We've been jumping kind of in and out of it a little bit more this year so far through two games, and we've had success with it. The key is first and second down and converting and giving ourselves more opportunities so we can get in that stuff. But, we'll continue to work that in.
Rod Wolf, of course, was on with Bill Michaels yesterday. A real good interview. Was there anything that Rod Wolf said that was news to you?
You know, he always defines his stuff as the bottom line at the end of the day. What was the best thing to do for the Packers, you know, and not to just get you through the next couple of weeks, but what's going to be the best thing to do, you know, moving forward? I guess, you know, that would play into a decision like Trevor Davis. I don't understand exactly how that gets you through the next 2 weeks when you've got someone like that. But at the other hand, you know, when you look at it, the big picture and down the road, it's like, look, we're probably not going to re-sign this guy. He's in his fourth year. And if there's a way that we can get a sixth-round pick, that's enough value there. You know, at the end of the day, it comes down to sort of math in your evaluations. And Ron instilled that, you know, don't have emotional decisions. He's also talked a lot about mistakes that he's made, too. He thought that Ray Lewis would be there on the board when they took it. And he says he couldn't believe, he said his heart broke when the Baltimore Ravens took Ray Lewis. And he's kicked himself ever since then because he thought, I assumed Ray Lewis would be there on the board. I should have traded up to get him. If you think that player's worth that much value, then go get him. Trade up to go get him and secure a player like that. So, you know, he's very honest about that, very brutally honest. And he was pretty honest while he was in the chair, too.
Mike Clemens, you can find that interview, by the way, radio.com, 1057fmthefan.com, as well as all of Mike's work here on The Fan. Mike, we will talk to you
after the Packers whoop up on the Broncos.
Thank you, boys.
Mike Clemens joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Again, more on the Packers-Broncos. We'll preview that tomorrow. Hey, if you're looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019, look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common sense lending to your community since 1935. We are going to talk about a city I don't think we've ever talked about on the history of this show, Wilmont, Wisconsin, where a coach did something that if he did it anywhere else but a football field, dude would be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it on a football field, so he gets a free pass. We'll talk to you about that story that's making national headlines coming up next. Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan. Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. We'll talk more Badgers, Michigan tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Ben Wergel, BadgersInsider.com, will join us. We will take a look at the Packers-Broncos game at 8:20. And then at 9 o'clock, we're going to preview it from the Broncos perspective. Chuck booked a guy, and I forgot his name. Bruce Marcus? What's his name?
Bruce Marcus used to work in lacrosse.
Yeah.
This guy works in Denver.
Who?
Bruce Morton.
Bruce Morton. 9 o'clock.
All right. We get Bruce Marcus. Bruce Marcus won't talk to me.
Yeah, he hates you.
He and I were the first talk show hosts in town here, Duel, back in the mid-90s on sports radio.
Does anyone know what we're talking about or no? Maybe someone.
Yeah, people ask me, who was that guy who did sports talk? Yeah, our show was from 2 to 6, and he'd show up at like 2:30. So, Bruce, you coming in today? You know, this is back before I had cell phones. Yeah, I haven't talked to him since then.
This is a guy that worked in lacrosse when I worked there.
Yeah.
And Bruce Marcus dressed like he went for Oscar the Grouch's Halloween and then never changed his costume.
Yeah. You know, he's just a different guy. I mean, good guy, but man, he's got a chip on his shoulder. And for whatever reason, I didn't call him back a couple times though. Right away, and that was it. So you can go right to his S list real quick.
Well, Chuck, we have Bruce Marcus on the line right now. Bruce, I'm just
kidding. He would never call. He'd hang up. No. You know, his friends with him, who sees him a lot, is Mike Clemens.
Oh, Clem.
Clemsy. Clemsy's the one guy who hasn't pissed him off yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that could happen. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. So I learned where Wilmont, Wisconsin is this week. It's by the Illinois border,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wilmont?
I assumed it was up north.
No, Wilmont, Lake Geneva Badger. Yeah.
Not too familiar with the Janesville,
that's
Geneva.
Southern Lakes. That's great. That's
area.
Just at a golf outing down there.
Stand on a hill and see into Illinois, I don't want to be in that town.
Yeah. No.
Milwaukee's about as south as I will go.
The one part about it, I agree, and I'm with you, but I'm down there. I don't like seeing all the Illinois license plates. I don't. It's just a haven for Illinois people.
So there was a football game there on September 6th. And this video is just blown up this week. A kid ran out on the field, and then one of the coaches decked him. I don't know if that's allowed. I think I have a problem with the coach decking him.
Well, the kid should not be running on the field.
True.
Okay. So when somebody's in this day and age, when somebody's running onto the field, all right, who knows what this kid's going to do?
Also true.
You don't know if he's got a weapon. You don't know if he's got a device, what he's got on him. So your best bet is to take, just like when a kid, what if somebody runs out of Miller Park? These guys are getting tackled from running out of Miller Park.
Yeah, I see your point.
So you have to, for the safety of everybody, that kid should not be running on the field. And for anybody to be pissed at the coach for taking this kid out, for preventing whatever this kid was up to, I'm with the coach.
Well, it sounds like
administration better be out.
You sound like he's just running out there to run out.
We don't know that, but at the time, you don't know that. If that's the case, okay. You should. What are you doing running out there? You know, you shouldn't be running out there. That's not good.
Okay, so
coach was around when that punk tried to knock off the Crusher a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, it was this weekend, the Crusher statue.
Yeah, I wish that coach was there to break
to
him
his
out
face.
Too. Yeah, they take a brick to that kid's face.
Okay, here's my problem with the coach decking the player.
Okay.
So Wilmont Union High School, player runs onto the field, coach decks him. Not player runs onto the field, fan runs onto the field. So just like you always see, fan run onto the field, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't see it because TV networks won't show it when it happens in a pro game. if the coach was thinking, oh my goodness, there is somebody on this field that doesn't belong here, he may be a threat to these players and to the public, I must do something about it, then I applaud the coach.
Okay.
But why do I think that the coach in the back of his head has seen all these players take out fans as violent as can be and thought, this is my shot? Why do I think that that might be what happened?
What do you mean, this is my shot? This is
I'm going to take out, I got a free shot to nail this person. I'm going to do it.
Because
he didn't go up to him and just like corral him.
Mm-hmm. He
went up to him and clotheslined
him. I don't know the coach.
I don't either.
I don't know the coach. So in other words, this was my chance to pound on a kid and get away with it.
Yes.
Or could he have looked at it this way? This is my chance to get in the news, one way or the other. And what are people going to do? I don't know. It just happened so it was an instinctive thing the guy did. And I'm for the coach. And I hope administration, you never know what administrators are going to come down these days. And administrators should always be on the coach's side. In most cases, the teacher's side, if they're in the right. So I hope they're on the coach's side here.
So that story's all over the place. You can check that out. I'm reading it off Fox News.com.
So what was the afterthought of this? What happened to the coach? They didn't suspend the coach, hopefully. What happened to the kid? Did the kid get hurt? I haven't seen anything since I saw the video. There's been no follow-up on this story.
I think it's precious that you assumed I did more research on this topic other than and BS about it to get to the Bill Michaels show.
I'm wondering if you had heard if there anything had happened. Not that you had done any research, had overheard, oh, by the way, I heard, the coach was happened to this, or he was given a declaration or whatever.
I didn't do any further.
I was so pissed off at the Crusher statue. I saw the video last night with that kid going to the Crusher statue in South Milwaukee and trying to deface it, throwing a brick against it. That kid, I hope he gets some sort of jail time for that. This is a second offense.
Just back to the Wilmont thing, Gary tweets in, the coach was a former police officer. They are taught to take out the threat when someone interferes in the game like that.
Okay. Good for him.
I guess, what I'm saying, though? When fans run onto the field and you can clearly tell that they are no harm and they're just doing whatever, then the player will jack up the fan. That's not needed.
Yes, it is.
I'll make the Brewers mad.
Okay. No, go ahead.
What can I say?
If you run on the field.
If I run on the Miller Park field tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm running around with my shirt off like an idiot.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm naked.
Yeah.
I've got no weapon of any kind. You can tell I'm just doing it for attention for my radio show.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And if the way that I am taken down is like something that you would get arrested for if you did it outside of a field, that's garbage. That's not right either.
What are you doing on the field? You shouldn't be on the field.
No, I shouldn't be on the field, but that doesn't give the people that take me down the right to
a free shot.
Give me an RKO.
Yeah. No, I think you run on the field, you do whether you're naked or you are fully clothed, anybody should do whatever it takes to get you down. You deserve the shot you get. You deserve to be taken out.
Everyone's safe, and that's the important thing.
And everybody's safe from Bark. He's not doing that today.
I am not doing that, nor do I encourage it. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.